Welcome to the first post-nomination podcast. I'm your host Nathaniel, and I returned to you. But last week you heard from Nick Davis,
Hi.
Katie Rich,
I'm still here, yeah.
and Joe Reed.
Hello.
You guys, I loved hearing your discussion. It was almost really exciting to not be part of it, so I could listen like a fan of the podcast instead of.
And not have to hear your own voice, which is the worst part.
Yeah, and not have to think, oh, I could have said that better, or that sort of thing. You guys were all brilliant.
I'm glad we made you proud.
Yes.
I hope you liked our white oleander discussion.
I just looked it up. Germany last year, instead of Phoenix, they submitted Beloved Sisters.
Yeah, because people love 3-hour literary biographies from the 18th century.
Right.
I think
Rather
they really.
than Holocaust movies.
Yeah, we all know Oscars hate Holocaust movies.
If there's ever been a right call.
But I don't. Phoenix is one of those movies that seem to really sneak up on people because I don't remember people being excited about it last year.
Well, and it was open. It opened a lot earlier in the year this year, and people really only, I only really heard people start talking about it when it came time to do like year-end lists and stuff like that. And then it seemed like a lot of people were catching up on it at the end. And like, it's great and like a testament to like why year-end lists are wonderful and important. But yeah, I don't remember hearing about it at all until like December.
And now it's on Netflix, so everyone else can
Right.
do that catching up.
Which I think is what's a lot of the reason people are discussing it so much too. Because people are seeing it, because it's so easy to watch things there.
Yeah.
But it actually did quite well this summer. I mean, I don't I
Yeah, it
felt
did Ida
digital.
levels.
Sorry?
It did Ida levels.
Yeah. Anyway, I feel like it's had several bubbles, but it's nice that it just seems to be picking up more of an audience. But look at us starting our post-nomination podcast with something that wasn't even eligible.
We can't be tamed, to quote Miley Cyrus from years ago.
Where do you want us to start, Nathaniel?
I was just thinking there are so many things to discuss that we should just start with something random, like how about that Bridge of Spies?
Hey.
It's funny, like every year it seems to me that there's one major nomination, major player that people just don't really talk about ever.
What was last year's?
Oh, throw me a
Birdman.
Of course. No one talked about Birdman.
Well, I guess last year they did talk about Theory of Everything, but it would be something like that, where, very solid nomination count, but who is really like, it's their movie,
Or like The Imitation Game or something.
That got a lot of press.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I feel like Bridge of Spies
Honor
was
the
one
man,
that.
honor the film.
Yeah.
I feel like Bridge of Spies was one that a lot of people were saying is exactly the Academy's taste and won't sound like prognosticators and stuff are giving it as much credit as they probably should.
Yes.
And here we are.
Yeah, I heard it. I mean, my colleague Richard Lawson had predicted it for its like, really early Best Picture winner, which I think we all know now isn't going to happen. But he was definitely one of the people who kept saying that like Bridge of Spies is exactly the kind of movie the Academy is going to like better than, a bunch of critics.
Well, it's one of those things that if you ever like just sort of like stop and think about it for 3 seconds, it's very obvious. And
Yeah.
Right.
it's just that
Exactly.
you don't want to think about it because you want to think about more exciting things. And I think we do this a lot. And this year they did give us a lot of more exciting things, but at the same time, they're like, but we also like that stuff we like. And as an example of that, I don't think Bridge of Spies is particularly terrible. It's not great. It's the definition of middle of the road for me. And like, that's super fine.
Oh, I agree. As those things go, it's totally fine. It's a solid movie. But
And a discussion stopper.
yeah, so but the other thing I wanted to discuss, and I don't want to dwell on it too much just because it's the topic everybody's discussing, but the Oscar So White thing and the Straight Outta Compton and stuff like that. I've been hearing things like, well, if Straight Outta Compton had been about a rock musician or, something, it would have been nominated. And I'm not 100% sure I agree with that because, like, Love and Mercy seem to me in the same situation, except for that it was much less of a hit at the box office. Of like the type of rock star or, you know, music biopic that they would normally go for, I got zero nominations. So how are you guys feeling about the Straight Outta Compton thing? Or do you think all the excitement about it was misplaced and it all should have gone in Creed's corner? Because that's what I think.
That's where I am. But I do think the Straight Outta Compton screenplay nod is really fascinating and kind of in a not very flattering parallel to Selma getting that, you know, just the Best Picture nomination and then song and that was it. Like,
right.
There does seem to be this weird spot they have for movies with black people where they like it enough to fit it in somewhere, but in kind of a random way. I can't figure out how that can be anything systematic. I mean, the screenwriters are the ones voting on the screenplay nominations, but It does look weird and not great for an Academy that is having pretty well-publicized race problems.
Well, yes, except the Selma thing was slightly different in that you usually don't see Best Picture nominees with two nominations, where,
yes,
like,
that one was especially weird.
You see screenplay nominees as, like, a one nomination. Like, you see that a lot. Like,
yes.
A movie with one nomination and it's a screenplay.
But Straight Outta Compton was not anything anyone would have.
But in the context of everything else, it's kind of rough.
Yeah, and like Straight Outta Compton doesn't really fit the profile of like a lone screenplay nomination. Like, this is, we like it, but it's too weird for us. Like, it's that screenplay is not anything anyone would have.
Well, I was going to say, the screenplay
about
is certainly not the thing about it that I would honor if I was going to honor one thing about
it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had predicted it for sound mixing, just because that's a place
me too.
Where music
I predicted
can
that
do
too.
Really well. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember what got it instead, but it was that seemed like
The Revenant, just like in every other category.
And Bridge of Spies.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, my it's a music film, so it'll be nominated in sound mixing. Did not pay off this year
for that, or Love and Mercy, sadly.
I feel like a lot of I do think that there may have been such a thing as a Straight Outta Compton Creed split, and I know that may just sound like a completely like benighted way of just pitting black films against each other, but I definitely think that, you know, as much as the whiteness of the acting categories has taken the brunt of the criticism, it's even harder for people of color to get a break in almost any other branch you want to talk about in the Academy. And so the fact that you don't see those movies making headway in a lot of the below-the-line categories, maybe even more than acting, doesn't surprise me that much. And as they've continued to diversify the Academy, I do think that, in a sense, when there's a year where anybody in Hollywood is pushing for more diverse projects or non-white stories, and it's clear that Selma, not just strategically, also out of actual enthusiasm, like, is the place to put that vote. This year, there might have been a couple of those places. But I mean, you've said it a million times, Nathaniel, and I think we all agree that it does feel like Creed should have been tapped for more of a push earlier. Though I also wonder if it was a Selma thing of, frankly, it was just finished too late and those wheels just hadn't gotten turning yet. And
I also wonder if Warner Brothers had its blockbuster contender in Mad Max and was kind of worried about not poisoning the well. There's a better metaphor for that, but like kind of spreading their efforts too thin. And, you know, getting a blockbuster in there is not easy. The fact that Mad Max and The Martian are both in there is kind of rare. So Creed might have been like a bridge, you know, might have split Warner Brothers too much.
Well, yeah. And I think I know a lot of people said this, and I think Mark Harris was one of them. And I agree that like it seemed from an outsider's perspective that they didn't know what they had on their hands with Creed.
With Creed, yeah.
And in many ways, like the seventh sequel to a thing and Rocky Balboa did nothing and that kind of stuff, you can sort of understand it, except you only really need to like watch the movie to understand that you have something different. Although I do think back to Straight Outta Compton for a second and to what Nick said, and I think what you said is fairly on point, but I think something like the Straight Outta Compton screenplay nomination sort of shows how sort of tricky it gets when you try to talk about movies that are like black movies, when like Straight Outta Compton is a movie that, you know, we could say is a black movie, and yet its nomination was for its white screenwriters.
Yeah.
Which is why I feel like the acting categories is at least very cut and dried in terms of like, these are the faces we see and we can sort of, you know, evaluate it that way.
Yeah,
I see your point, but I also feel like a lot of people who devote a lot of time to thinking about this race for months a lot of them only noticed that Straight Outta Compton was written by four white people when the nomination came out, you know?
Yeah, I did not know at all.
I didn't either.
And so, like, when people started dissing the Academy for that, I just thought, you know, as much as I understand the frustration, it seems like something about that seems really petty to me, because, like, people on the craft categories, people voting, even people who voting, who sometimes they know the contenders and sometimes they don't, they're voting on the movie. They're not thinking, like, people don't think, ooh, Jacqueline West, I love her.
And right, actors and amazing directors are the only ones who get voted on as personalities.
People don't think that Jacqueline West is so cute and funny, who did the costumes for The Revenant, I'm going to vote for her. That's not really how it works for the craft categories. You can't get the, unless you are like a legend and somebody that's constantly in the situation, like a John Williams or like Sandy Powell.
Or you're Aaron Sorkin and you've been around long enough that everyone says, let's not.
Right.
But I do think the scale of the problem is such that, you know, I mean, you kind of see where everybody's coming from on every side of these controversies, you know, like, and you know, frankly, like you, like Joe and Nathaniel, like you both had really different ways of kind of entering that conversation this week and even had a little conversation about it publicly. And you see where everybody's coming from, right? Like the problem is so multifaceted. And like the comments I was reading on Nathaniel's post from readers who were both like totally cheering on everything you were saying. And then also the people saying, but how can you not be upset, or how can can you really blame people for not seeing these finer points of how the nominating actually happens? Like maybe they totally don't care about that.
It reminds me of the Trump thing in a way, in that ultimately when it comes down to it, what the problem is, the problem comes down to a very personal, like granular, like on a single voter level, where it's just like, ultimately with Trump, my problem is that people like people are supporting him. And it's tough to really like go door to door with that one and just be like, what is your problem? What is your problem?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like that way with Oscar voters too, is just like, what the fuck? Do I have to really go like door to door with this one?
Yeah.
And that's why you sort of, you can't, that's, you know, quicksand. So you instead try and think of like systemic solutions and institutional solutions, and those are a lot harder.
Yeah, and I did, like, Nick, I'm glad you brought the articles up, because Joe, I should apologize to you. Rereading it did seem like I was being unduly harsh.
Do you want to explain a little bit what you mean by looking
at the sure. Thing? So Joe published a list of 20 performances that by actors of color that they could have nominated, right? And I got a little snippy because I was doing the like nitpicky thing of, but this person wasn't eligible and all that stuff, right? So, but I think where I came off wrong, and where one of my favorite commenters on my site who often makes me think about things in a slightly different way,
Hayden W.
Hayden, yeah, he pointed out, you know, is that do you really think that. Do you really not want to hear other voices who maybe don't understand the minutiae of how things work, because these are, you know, systemic things, and not the minutiae is where you can easily brush off any complaint, essentially, which is true. And I also didn't want to come across as like I'm someone who doesn't want people to think outside the box, because I certainly do. Like what all of us try to do when we write about movies, those of us who really care about the cinemas, we want people to look at all these different types of greatness in movies and, you know, pick the ones they love best, rather than just, oh, that person's famous, I'll vote for them. So we try to do that year round. So I didn't want to be disingenuous about acting like we shouldn't have done that. So for that reason, I apologize.
Oh, that's fine. And I mean, I totally get the whole idea of there are, you know, ways we talk about the Oscars in the ideal and the ways that we talk about the Oscars in the real. And I get that. And my article was purely in, you know, the realm of the ideal, in that, but it also was just sort of like, you know, on some level, that is, to me, one of the things that will get us to a better place, is if, you know, the Oscars and the awards conversation, that kind of thing, sort of steps out of what we've come to accept as realistic possibilities. And the only way we're going to move forward beyond, you know, a huge influx of, you know, prestige Oscar bait made by and made about, minorities is just sort of like expand our horizons a little bit. And that was, I think, the main crux of my article, is just sort of like, there is, it's not like there isn't a world in which you could have, you know, these different faces on your ballots. It wasn't exactly, you know, advocating that these are the 20 people who should have been nominated for Oscars, or even in a couple of cases could have been, because there were a couple, the actor from Timbuktu and the actress from The Assassin. But it was just sort of, you know, taking a step back and being like, here is, you know, an alternate universe that exists out there, and perhaps, you know, a melding of these two universes is something that could have happened.
Well, and I think that we both mentioned what Mark Harris said on Twitter, just that, like, the way that change is happening is long, and it's about replacing the membership and inviting new people into it, and the Academy is getting more diverse every single year. So in 20 years, it might not be insane to think that maybe the actresses from Tangerine could have gotten a nomination, and the more we talk about possibilities like that, the more those younger members of the Academy, or anyone who might be listening to us, you know, if we can flatter ourselves to think that's happening, the more possible that can be. Like, the more talking about it, the more likely it is to happen.
Mm-hmm. But I also thought, and I know we probably don't want to talk about this the whole time, but that when Mark Harris was saying this isn't like an institutional corporation with its own kind of entrenched personality that's operating out of some monolithic choice, this is just about the voters weren't frankly that interested in these movies. And he was saying a version of that I'm probably paraphrasing badly, as a way to try to mollify, this isn't the best moment for institutional racism critiques, but the sort of widespread, like, lack of interest, you know, that I know so many people who tell me they loved Creed who weren't going to see it. And I don't think it's just about race. I think a lot of them, it's about Rocky, but both ways, then they see it, love it, can't believe how much they liked it. I've heard some of that with Compton too. So diversifying the membership for sure, but also I hope all these conversations make voters realize you don't want to get to December 20th and suddenly be self-conscious that you don't have any non-white people on your ballot. You know, you should care about these stories all year long. And
well, and it also goes back to what we talk about, like, totally leaving the minority, you know, point aside for a moment. It also goes back to what we talk about, like, people who are trying to be conscientious of how they view art or whatever, you're supposed to actually, like, consume a lot of it. Yeah. You know, so if you're just waiting till the end of the year and you're like, oh, or what are people saying we should look at? That's where you're going to go so wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what people do. Like, I think it was maybe Mark Harris again who said something about, or maybe it was a David Polian arguing with somebody about, like, people, the voters, like, it's like tax season. They have to watch all these movies. And I'm like, maybe they should be watching movies in April and thinking, I'm going to vote for that next year, you know, that sort of thing. But again, stepping aside from this in that way, in terms of, like, diversity, one thing that is an issue, even if, like, let's pretend we live in a fantasy world where everything was equal, you still have a problem with insularity within branches that has nothing to do with race and has everything to do with reputation, which I think is kind of a big problem in some of the branches. Like, I'm thinking of, like, cinematography and original score. Like, how do you get people to look beyond their friends and their people that they just naturally, you know, think, oh, that person's awesome, and voting for them, rather than, like, looking at what else might be out there? I mean, the reason I point out cinematography, it's not because these five movies nominated, which are Carol, Hateful Eight, Mad Max, The Revenant, and Sicario, it's not because those aren't beautifully shot, because they are. But it's because cinematography for the past, like, 10 years has been just this extraordinarily rich stuff in cinema. And the Oscars have really been rewarding the same people that they always reward. So there's a lot of new, exciting cinematographers that have yet to be even their first nomination. And for 10 years, we've been, like, there's a ton of people that have not been recognized that have been just doing bang-up work. So how do you get people to look outside of their insular clubs, you know?
Nathaniel, who are you thinking of from this year, who you were hoping to see sneak in?
Like, from this year, I was thinking of, oh, God. I should be more prepared for these questions.
Sorry.
Of course you were
I feel like I'm
that.
Cross-examined.
I had somebody in mind, but then, thinking back to just the general gist of the past 10 years, like, we've got people like Bradford Young, who does amazing work almost every year. We've got people like Greg Fraser, who does amazing work almost every year. And
Maurice Alberti from Creed.
Yeah, there's mm-hmm. one. And they're just all these, like, interesting voices, if you will, even though it's a visual medium. And it's like breaking into the club is so difficult, regardless of, you know, what color your skin is or what gender you are.
It like, is. I mean, I'm obviously not contesting any of that because I think the case makes itself. But it is, at the same time, you realize how quickly somebody like Lubezki goes from, like, why can't he get arrested to, you know, it's almost hard to remember how under-recognized he felt for such a long time now that
just
we're in
this. Sloss felt the same way for a little bit, I feel like. It took him a while to break into his first nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Who? I'm sorry?
Alexandre Desplat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes.
But I also feel like if you look at the cinematography nominees, it's not just the same names. They're all from sort of the big Oscar movies of the year, right? So,
yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Hateful Eight didn't get a ton of nominations, but it's clearly like that was going to be an Oscar entry. Same with something like, you know, Carol and Sicario, where it's just these are the names that get the plum gigs also. And I know that that's sort of a vicious cycle in and of itself. In mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, that was kind of, if I had a disappointment about this year's nominations, and there were a lot of ones that I loved, but was that, yeah, I was doing the thing a lot of us do all the time of tallying, like, what movies do I still have to see? And there were way fewer this year because even across categories like visual effects or song or sometimes costume, like, there are places where you often run into these outliers that just got nominated there. And that's often where I wind up having to, like, pick up some stuff. But we saw a lot of the same movies across all these branches sort of over and over again, which is kind of interesting that so many movies had big nomination tallies. But
Well, and it's interesting because the acting categories sort of went away from that trend a little bit, because the trend in the acting categories had been a lot more narrowing and a lot more hewing to Best Picture. And the numbers sort of moved a little bit away this year with stuff like, because 45 Years and Joy.
Trumbo.
And, Creed got acting nominations. But yeah, in the tech categories, certainly, there was a lot of defaulting to The Revenant, a lot of defaulting to Mad Max. And I think, you know, clearly, I mean, I feel like it with Mad Max, a lot of that is deserved. But I feel like, yeah, what Nick is saying is totally right, in that there wasn't a lot of, you know, there weren't a lot of, like, Black Dahlia nominations, which is always what I think of when I think of, like, strange sort of against the grain tech nominations.
Joe, you'll always have the 100-year-old man who climbed out the window.
Hey,
I'm going to say.
Yeah. You predicted so well.
That was literally, like, the last day, too, and I was just like, guys, you want me to make us look really smart? Half a minute. So.
Well, I hope your raise has come through.
I was so disappointed I didn't call that category 100% correctly, because I also had the 100-year-old man, but I called Mr. Holmes instead of The Revenant.
The only one old man makeup. And as I said in my article, they're not going to find it as impressive to make an old man look older. So they tend to like when you make a younger man look old. So
But I also thought, and this just, you know, something I've learned over and over again, never trust the makeup branch to be consistent about anything, but I've often found that makeup nominations don't go to the movies where they just make someone look like they're close to death, which is basically the hook of The Revenant.
Right.
But they often ignore those type of movies.
They do.
But
Dallas Buyers Club won for it a couple of years ago, though, so there's some track record.
Yeah.
Sure, but it's not always like that split skin kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His lips are chapped. Give him a makeup nomination.
I mean, honestly, I think that's probably the nomination that I would most have thought The Revenant deserved on my list of, like, most deserved nominations of the 12. I think that makeup was, like, it's sort of how I wanted them to nominate The Impossible for makeup, just because they, like, made me jump out of my seat at that one point.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, and not to pick on The Revenant, because I know that, like, it's sort of, it's going to become a bit of a punching bag in terms of this kind of thing, because, like, 12 nominations is a lot. But costume design? Like, production design? I don't quite... You know, God love Jack Fisk, but like, I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, I love both of those artists.
Yeah.
I interviewed them both like shortly before the nominations, and I thought, I mean, this is just like funny insider stuff, but I thought, I've got to get these interviews published because they're not going to be nominated. That's totally what I thought. And then it would be awkward to publish the interviews afterwards. But then they were both nominated.
As the resident person who liked The Revenant, I will say that it's the kind of movie you walk out of being kind of impressed with the scale and the accomplishment of it, similar to Mad Max, where you kind of walk out and you're like, how the hell did they pull all of that off? So I can see people coming up being like, I mean, the scale of this whole thing was such, and the costumes were convincing enough that I'm going to put it on there because I'm impressed by the production as a whole. I don't know how people vote in those categories, but I can see how that would happen.
I've been having this fantasy that because Mad Max and The Martian and The Revenant all did so well, and are going to put a whole lot of voters through a whole lot of like, oh, you got to come get me. Oh, keep driving. Like, there's just going to be so much of that, that this could be really great news for Spotlight. Like, its big problem was people starting to the extent it had a big problem, maybe it didn't have one, but people thinking like, oh, it's not cinematic enough, or is it kind of too quiet? But up against all of that, it sure feels in its way, I don't want to say refreshing because of what it's about, but... I really wanted Spotlight to get a boost, which is weird because I like it about as much as Mad Max, so it's not about rooting against that one. But
Well, thinking that Mad Max probably won't win, which I think we can all agree on,
yes.
Like Spotlight does seem like the one to root for. Which I am also I like The Revenant, but I'm also rooting for Spotlight.
I honestly think Spotlight did get a boost in terms of expectations versus reality. Like I think a lot of the conversation among, like, you know, Oscar wags such as ourselves, was when Spotlight was kind of presumed to be a contender to win Best Picture, it was, well, how can it win Best Picture if it's only going to get four nominations? And people were trying to sort of, like, tally up how many that it got. And the fact that it got six, which seems to me like a safe number for making that insurgent run, especially in the last 10 years when, like, the number of total nominations for Best Picture winners has been allowed to slide back down a little.
I think Speech had four. Something had four.
Something had five. I think it was Argo.
I think it was Argo too.
That had five. And that felt like sort of like the basement of it. But the fact that it got six and the fact that it got more than The Big Short, and I know that like voters don't look at number tallies when they make their votes, but I think it's all sort of a piece of general enthusiasm. The fact that they did manage to get two acting nominations I think says a lot, especially when there were a lot of people predicting as few as none, you know what I mean? That I think it allows Spotlight to be positioned where it wants to be right now. And
Especially with the editing nomination.
Yes, I think that's very important. I think its biggest threat had been The Big Short and the way that The Big Short had been really gaining momentum. And that really kind of got halted on Thursday with that movie. And I think now what we're thinking is, well, maybe we were all sleeping on The Revenant too much. And maybe we were all sort of like just sort of taking it for granted that Inarritu wouldn't win twice in a row. But I think right now, to me, it's The Revenant and it's Spotlight and it's kind of nothing else.
I
don't know what more Big Short would have been nominated for than what it got, really.
Right.
I mean, there could have been a couple more actors, but I think that's a good day.
Yeah, but I think then all of a sudden you're talking about The Big Short in that same light of how can it win Best Picture with only five nominations? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's getting that conversation that I think people were expecting Spotlight to have gotten.
Yeah, and it's not going to have the Ben Affleck narrative that Argo had going for it to kind of
Nobody talked about it on nomination day, and I think that campaigns can
get back up to speed quickly,
but like it really seems to lose a lot of steam between that and between getting nothing at the Golden Globes, which again, how much does that really mean? But in terms of like the attention economy, it had a very quiet week.
Attention economy is a great phrase.
Yeah, I mean, people always love to use the Globes and other precursors as like this sort of Rorschach thing for whatever they're feeling, they're going to use it to show that. because like you'll hear the same people who would be like, well, this happened at the Globes, so we'll also say about the Globes, oh, they don't matter if they don't, you know.
I think they don't matter voting wise, but I think they do matter visibility wise.
I think that's true of all the precursors.
Yeah.
Like if you look at the SAG thing, you know, they had what you would call an off year if you cared about things like how well they predict the Oscars.
Right.
But that is like so a small part of it, because what the problem is always the visibility. Like if something gets nominated, people are more likely to look at it.
Yeah.
And so like what SAG essentially did by nominating as strangely as they did this year was like cut off attention to worthier, less maybe default choices.
But so if the Big Short wins the SAG though, which I think seems pretty possible, like doesn't that change this all again?
Yes.
Yes, but I think Spotlight will win SAG.
Well, either way, it's kind of interesting to me how they both... I feel like we're getting this 1998, like, two Elizabeths versus three World War IIs. Like,
yeah.
You're yeah. a bunch of, like, kind of man-ish, kind of, mm-hmm. asterisk, like, action adventures, and then these two kind of topical movies that seem pretty likely to win the two screenplay awards, and one of them will be the, like, screenplay go-home consolation version of those prizes, and one will be the... omen of what's winning Best Picture later.
and we won't know until later in the night.
Right.
That'll be fun. And then if Beast of No Nation wins the SAG Award, all hell breaks loose.
Literally. And it makes director totally exciting, because I'd be kind of surprised if either of those movies took that prize, but what the hell? Like,
yeah. It's also interesting to think of, now that we brought up Argo a little bit ago, how easily that thing... that kind of Argo situation where Affleck got snubbed and then all of a sudden he was the entire story is kind of a sort of a capricious thing, in that very well could have been the case for The Martian on Thursday, that everybody expected The Martian to do well. Mm-hmm. Ridley Scott gets the Best Director snub, and a lot of people thought that he was going to be a major contender in that category.
Yeah.
And how easily that could have become a Ben Affleck and Argo story, and it just didn't. And by that very fact, now, you know, one is sort of assuming that The Martian is dead in the water as a Best Picture contender. And it's just sort of funny to me how, like, all of that sort of rides on the whim of what we decide is the story of the day. And because there were bigger stories of the day on Thursday, then... you know, in this sort of like sliding doors universe that just like, well, now we've gone down this other path. And that's sort of why I find the Oscars so fascinating, is because it is just, it's a story of competing narratives and roads not taken. And I think it's just very cool in that way.
Yeah, I agree. And that's also why I think sometimes when you hear other people discuss the Oscars, sometimes you're like, wait, which Oscars are you watching? Because the competing narratives, sometimes people will latch onto things that you don't think of as a narrative at all.
I kind of felt with The Martian that unlike Argo or Driving Miss Daisy, like The Martian not only didn't have the like, but this person went out of their way to make something really socially important, you know, or really political. Like, and in fact, it seemed to me like by chasing the comedy tag for purposes of the Globes, which I don't think was crazy at all, but like The Martian could have gone that way, or it could have gone like, I know this looks like a popcorn blockbuster, but this is all about American ingenuity and global collaboration, and this is important. Mm-hmm, and like by you can do one or you can do the other, but without that, I never quite saw how it was going to build up the cumulative goodwill of the Academy to be more than an also-ran.
I totally agree. I didn't have an issue with it calling itself a comedy, but on the other hand, I thought this is really not going to help it win Oscars.
Yeah.
Because it immediately makes it look light, which it is, and there's nothing wrong with light, entertaining movies, but it makes it harder for the Academy, which, you know, if you are important with all caps, you know, they are more likely to care.
And also, it's hard to imagine, like, if it is a race between The Big Short, Spotlight, and The Revenant, like, someone choosing The Martian survival story over The Revenant survival story in terms of, like, this is an important movie.
Totally.
Like, that it wasn't going to win that battle, so maybe they made the smart choice of going for the Globe. I mean, I don't think they expected Ridley Scott to get snubbed, but, you know, in a way, it kind of worked out.
Yeah, because I think actually people probably expected him to win.
I did. I think he was my most recent prediction for sure.
But I also think, and I know, you know, people were like, oh, it doesn't matter because the voting had closed. But I thought his speech at the Globes was so fascinating in terms of realizing that someone probably is viewed as a producer, more as a director, even though he's a famous director.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, his entire speech was about, like, box office and, like...
He seemed very removed from the story of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the art of, like, yeah. You know, he wasn't like, I really wanted to tell this story. It was all about, like, how well they did at the box office.
Yeah.
It really surprised me.
That's how he talks, like, to blame myself for a minute. He was on Little Gold Men, and he talked exactly like that. He was like, well, we made our money, and, like, we had to make it for this certain amount. And I was like, you are a very good producer, Ridley Scott.
So it was brilliant, like, path laying for the Thalberg that he'll now get in a year or two as compensation for missing this year.
But it's really no surprise that his movies may have been embraced in the past, but not him, you know, after seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm curious, who do we think is going to win Best Director? Is it just George Miller in a Cuaron, Ang Lee
I keep hoping that, but I think, Nat, don't be foolish. That's insane. But then on the other hand... Maybe the other people blur together for a lot of the voters. I don't know.
Or do we just have Inarritu blindness again, like I mentioned before? Are we really just like totally ruling it out that Inarritu could win 2 years in a row, and he just does?
I think he could absolutely win again, but I'm having a really hard time getting a temperature read on whether Hollywood is annoyed by him like the internet seems to be, or whether they're genuinely impressed at his chutzpah.
Right.
Well, clearly the Oscars are impressed.
They're generally, I think they're completely impressed with him. I mean, none of his movies, even the subtitled ones, have not been nominated for something.
I mean, I feel like
in the last couple years, there's been this ratcheting up of like, oh, wait, he's impossible to talk. You know, like the discourse around his insufferability, whether you buy into it or not, wasn't there when those other movies were racking up nominations. It doesn't dispute what you're saying, but I just wonder if he's become more divisive recently. Mm.
That could explain... how Tom Hooper sort of left good graces too.
I feel like it could still be Tom McCarthy. Like the power of Spotlight, I think, could really ramp up at this point. And a lot of people have watched it a second time and seen the amount of craft that goes into it. I mean, it is the smallest of the choices, but I don't think it's likely to be Adam McKay. So I don't know.
Or Lenny Abrahamson, one imagines.
Yeah, well, good for him. He got
Peter Cattaneo of 2015.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll have a great time attending the awards and cheering for
the Olsen. I agree. I'm happy for him, even though that was completely like... I made my little dorky pre-list thing that I printed out and had with check marks ready to go. And there were two occasions where I had to like quickly scribble something in that I hadn't had on my list. It was him, and it was the song from Chasing Extinction or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
So those were the two that were like so furthest off of my radar.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, we got caught up talking about so much other stuff.
Because at least it's very like sort of digestible. Well, we talked about picture and director basically,
and we have 5 weeks to.
Yes.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah.
To say go, Charlotte, go, 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 Charlotte.
Given that I have no idea who will win Best Supporting Actress, I'm now harboring fantasies of Oscar winner Rachel McAdams. Just. Because
it's not out of the question, I will
tell anything you. Could happen. It's so crazy.
Yep.
But that will have to be a discussion for next week. Thanks again to everybody listening. You know, obviously we have a few weeks left until the Oscars, so we will be discussing other categories in following podcasts. But thanks for listening in. Please let us know your comments about the Best Picture and Best Director fields, and you know how you think about our conversation about the insularity of the Oscars, how much of a problem that is, what we can do to solve it, that sort of thing. Thanks again to Joe Reed from Decider.
Thanks.
Katie Rich from Vanity Fair.
Thanks, everybody.
And Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks.
Go, Charlotte. Go. Go.
And we'll be back next week.
Were you trying to pull an Oscar out of Brie Larson's hands?
Yes.